Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guests are Sean Spencer and David Waterhouse. And Sean is the director of the documentary titled Ranger, and it's a true tale of war that is told by David Waterhouse as he's recalling his service in Iraq and Afghanistan. So welcome to the show, guys. Really glad to have both of you here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Scott. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Usually I like to just kind of give the guests a little chance to give a little bit of background, who you are, what your background is, that type of thing. Just telling a little bit about yourself. Would you guys mind, sharing a little bit, maybe start with you, David?
Yeah, sure. I enlisted into the Army after getting out of high school. 9/11 happened. And I don't know, just had this sense that I was supposed to be there. And then with Sean, not to speak for him, but he had a huge interest in the military too, and had considered going in. And I was kind of giving him the rundown of the nature of it. But I spent 4 years in special operations with the 75th Ranger Regiment. I was deployed to Afghanistan 3 times, Iraq 3 times, between 2003 and 2007.
And then for me, I got into film in my teenage years, shooting motorcycle videos, and that kind of led me into doing corporate advertisements, wedding videos, real estate, and then eventually kind of made that transition to doing more narrative stuff and doing documentary films.
And so do you guys know each other growing up then? Is that kind of how you guys got?
Yeah, that's probably an understatement.
Yeah, we were actually next door neighbors. So, you know, when he got back from the war, and I was very interested in hearing all those stories, and that's kind of how this whole thing got started, probably 15, 16, 17, almost 20 years ago now.
Almost
20.
Yeah,
and it's fortunate that the two of you guys knew each other so well growing up, and now got to the point where you have the platform to create this type of content. You had the background and the story to, you know, put this content out there. So, you know, really, I think it's a, great combination of the two of your backgrounds and skills and experiences.
We always kind of joke it's like the perfect storm.
It is a perfect storm having the two of those mesh together and have all of that kind of cool stuff coming out of what you guys have experienced. So I want to get a little bit more into the story of this documentary Ranger that I mentioned a little bit earlier, in this episode. I want to talk about that, kind of the inspiration behind it, and what prompted all of it. But before we get into that, we're gonna cut to a quick commercial break. So for the listeners here, stay tuned. Hurricane season is almost here, and the time to prepare is right now. When Hurricane Ida hit the Gulf Coast, it destroyed countless homes and left many without access to food and clean water. Millions lost power, and some for weeks. The floods that followed the hurricane washed out roads and made it impossible for grocery stores to restock their shelves. Families were left hungry and desperate, waiting for help that was slow to arrive. But what if you didn't have to rely on FEMA to provide for your family during a crisis? The answer is simple. Be prepared with emergency food kits from 4 Patriots. Their long-lasting and delicious food options are specifically designed to provide you and your loved ones with the sustenance you need when you need it most. 4 Patriots survival food kits are hand-packed in the USA. They last up to 25 years. They come packed inside covert storage totes. They include a wide variety of delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, and are backed by thousands of 5-star customer reviews. 4 Patriots survival food is not just for natural disasters, because in today's world of uncertain supply chains and unpredictable emergencies, it's more important than ever to have a backup plan. Whether it's a temporary power outage, a winter blizzard, or rising food costs, you can rest easy knowing that you have a reliable source of food to see you through. And right now, you can go to 4patriots.com and use code DRIVEON to get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including their emergency food supply kits designed to last up to 25 years. Just go to 4patriots.com and use code DRIVEON to get 10% off your purchase of 4Patriots Survival Food. That's 4patriots.com. Use code DRIVEON. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm here today with Sean and David talking about the documentary Ranger that they put together. Guys, I want to get into this documentary, talk about what it is, where the idea for the film came from, and all that type of stuff. Could you tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind it, where it came from?
Yeah.
Sean, I'll let you take that.
So, you know, over the years, you know, of hearing this story and just the profound effect it had on me being able to be so close to somebody in the special operations community and hear that intimate telling of it. I wanted to try and get that across to audiences. And I think a very similar way that that's done a lot of times now is through podcasts. You know, you have these conversations that are more intimate and it's going to, people can be a fly on the wall to those kind of conversations. So we wanted to try and integrate that feeling of you're just sitting in a room listening to this guy tell you his story. And over the years of us sitting there, you know, we started out as trying to start a war journal for this and eventually thought, hey, maybe we'll turn it into a novel. So we wanted to try and incorporate some of the elements of the feeling of a book with feeling of a podcast, and then also give you that visual representation to help kind of fill in the blanks as you're listening to this story.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've discovered through doing this podcast, I've been doing it for over 4 years now, and, the show has been, just so beneficial to me personally, just hearing so many different people's stories, all the different experiences that people have had. And like you were saying, like without a platform like a podcast or, you know, television or books or things like that, sometimes these stories just go untold. Like, you know, a lot of the older veterans, World War II and veterans like that, like maybe they might have told their story to friends or family and things like that. But outside of that, if they didn't tell anyone about their stories and their experiences from their perspective, their stories die with them. When they pass away, those stories are gone and they're lost to history. And so I think it's especially important that you guys are doing things like this, because this is going to outlive, all of us, really. And it'll help tell the story for years to come, right?
And I'll be 100% honest with you, if Sean and I hadn't sat down and done that, then it would have died on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
Same as what you just described.
Yeah. And I mean, I think when we were creating this, we even talked about, you know, I said, how amazing would it be to have something like this from World War I, World War II, even Vietnam? There are a lot of, you know, good tellings and people tell their stories, but, you know, there are so many stories that go untold. So to record something like this, you know, it has significance now and the effects on people, but I think in the future will also have significance to people, you know, could look back 25, 50 years from now and say, hey, this was about a guy at the turn of the century who was in war. So, you know, that's kind of the hopes of this thing.
Right. And having that to look back on, I think when you have future generations that are going to be sent off to war, because let's just face it, we are a war hungry country. It seems like we are always going out to war. Right. And I think hearing these stories from like a firsthand point of view, the guy who was on the ground in combat, dealing with the enemy and dealing with the aftermath after coming back home and all of that type of stuff, I think will open up people's eyes to say, you know, like, is this conflict that we're about to enter, is this actually necessary? Is this worth the cost of losing the men and women who go to fight, and the ongoing cost of bringing them back home and dealing with the stuff like post-traumatic stress and, all these other things that they're going to be dealing with? Is it actually worth it? And so maybe we take a step back and really think about these things. And I think stories like yours might be a good way to shed light on some of that, right?
Well, I we kind of started, and Sean started documenting a lot of this stuff years ago. And I think you had, what, like 30,000 words on paper somewhere around?
Yeah, yeah. A skeleton of a novel, for sure.
Sure.
But it was pretty quick that we realized that we didn't know anything about writing books, but we both enjoyed film. And I was like, hey, you know, I want to jot this down. I have three kids. And I want them to understand, you know, maybe later on in life, they're like, hey, I wonder why Dave was a little weird. It's like, hey, there you go, watch that. That's why. And they just snowballed from there and ended up being what it, you know, it is to this day. But
right. And I can totally agree or relate to what you're talking about there. I mean, I have three kids of my own, and I wrote a book about my experiences and stuff. And a lot of them are kind of difficult, like for me to talk about those experiences, and especially to my kids. Like, it just, I don't know, it just was a hard thing to talk about, but writing it down on paper for me was a lot easier. So that was just my way of getting it out there. And when they get a little bit older,
it was therapeutic when it was all said and done. I don't want to sound cliche, but that proverbial drop the rucksack off your back. It felt like I let it go a little bit, and, you know, but my kids still haven't seen it yet. They're still a little young. So one day.
Yeah, one day that might be a little traumatic for young kids to be watching, but it's there now. While the story was still fresh in your mind, and you know, not that it's going to go away in your mind, but you know, some of those vivid details are still fresh in your mind. And you make this documentary, and you put it out there. Now that story, as it existed at that point in time, is going to exist 10, 20, 30, however many years in the future that they eventually will watch it. You know, and that will be able to help share that story and shed some light on, you know, why was Dad the way he was? You know, why did he, you know, all that kind of stuff. It could shed some light on that. And I think just sharing stories is especially important.
You bring up the details, and we've been asked a few times, how do you remember all the details? And I thought Sean had the perfect response to that, is that we just never stop telling the story.
Right.
So those details that would be lost, you know, to the sands of time, have continued to be there, which we're able to infuse a lot of intimate details into the story because, like Sean said, we just never stop talking about it.
Right. And that, I think, just goes back to the World War I, World War II generations, even Korea, Vietnam, those guys coming back, and they just kept those stories to themselves. They didn't write them down. They didn't write a book. They didn't go on television. They didn't do any of this kind of stuff. You know, maybe they told family members, maybe a friend or something like that, but really those stories never got out. And so for history purposes, yeah, those stories aren't there, but even in their own minds, those stories maybe started to fade a bit too, because they weren't continuously telling the story like you just said, right?
And I've had Ranger buddies call me and be like, how did you remember that? Like, I totally forgot about that mission, or I forgot about that event, or the time some guy fell in a hole and everybody was cracked. There's so much stuff that just gets lost. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have Sean, because I didn't talk to my family. I didn't talk to my significant other at the time, who was with me the entire time I was there. I didn't talk to her about what happened. But for some reason, I found peace in talking to Sean, who also had interest in potentially pursuing a military career. And he was the first one I opened up to.
And it's great having that sort of support there. You know, even though you it's not a military connection, where, you know, you guys were maybe in combat together and, you know, saw some of the same things and were able to kind of relate to each other that way, you still had that person there, who you can open up to and you can share your story with. So with this documentary, what was the message that you guys were hoping to get across to the audience?
I think what I wanted to try and get across to audiences was what I experienced over the years, kind of listening to that story. I think I grew up, and a lot of, you know, people grew up with a very specific image of what military service was in their minds. You know, I mean, you look at any of the Hollywood movies, you have that, okay, it's about patriotism, heroism, and like, you know, dying for your country. And not that there's anything wrong with that. I think it's just when I was able to hear these stories and understand the fragility of life and just what these men and women sacrificed, I felt that other people needed to hear that story, and other people needed, you know, who don't have somebody in their life. Like I had somebody next door who had served, who had done all this stuff that I was thinking about potentially doing, you know, that helped me understand more so what it was really about. And so I think the message I wanted to get across to people was kind of having that veil pulled back and just showing people, hey, if you want to do this, here's at least you need to understand what you're getting yourself into, because so many people really have no idea until they're there and they're doing it. And then, you know, they have to carry on and go through it. So that I think that was the main message I wanted to get across, was just trying to impart that experience I had to other people that maybe don't know a veteran, don't have somebody in their life like that. And whether you're civilian or military, it's something that you can watch and learn a lot about your family members, brother, you know, sister, father, mother. It's something that everybody can watch and maybe understand somebody in their family a little bit better.
And there's so many people. Yeah. There's so many people these days who don't know people who served in the military, because it's a relatively small percent of the population that do serve, compared to generations in the past where it was a much, much higher percentage that was being shipped out to, you know, Europe or the Pacific and World War II or, you know, different wars like that. There's a lot of people. And so it was kind of a little bit more well known, I think, back then, like some of the things that people go through and what they experience, the death, the sacrifices, the lost limbs and other injuries that people are coming back with. Whereas now it's maybe not so much. I mean, maybe a little bit because of social media, it's maybe a little bit more well known, but as far as that direct connection, like you guys grew up next to each other. And so You definitely knew this person, and you know, you could probably tell a difference between the person that he was as, you know, a carefree kid probably growing up versus the guy he was when he came back. And so, yeah, sharing that type of story, I think it's important, because again, going back to that point that I was saying before, we need to shed light on all of these things so that future generations know, like, is this really worth the cost of going into this next conflict, right?
None of my kids were alive when 9/11 happened.
Right.
We watched the towers fall on live television, and They weren't born. So, I mean, when you talk about, you know, that gap, and them not necessarily having, you know, those visual images.
Or just those experiences.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, them to be able to watch something and be like, oh, pardon my language, but oh, shit, this really went that?
Right.
Like, this is how this played out? Yeah, this is how It played out. And, you know, I don't want them to know, because I do as a parent, and you can speak to this, and you try to shield Your kids and everything you can, but the same time, they have to be realistic about the way they think about it. And I'm like, hey, these are actual real world problems.
And exactly.
History is, in my opinion, the most important topic.
Absolutely.
You know, history is doomed to repeat itself, right?
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the challenges that veterans face and some of the things that you guys have experienced. So stay tuned.
Attention, proud Americans. The Patriot Box is here to ignite your patriotic spirit. As a veteran-owned business, they offer hand-curated boxes filled with useful, fun, and delightful American-made products. Join their community of proud Americans and receive your very own Patriot Box delivered straight to your door. Unbox a treasure chest of quality products while supporting local small businesses and veteran charities. Check out the link in our show notes to learn more.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Drive On. Guys, both of you guys have invested a lot of effort in shedding light on these challenges that, that veterans face after, after the service. We talked a little bit about it in the last segment before the break. What are your thoughts on the role of storytelling and things like using film or other mediums? Could be books, could be podcasts, other things like that. But I guess in this case specifically film, because of the nature of the documentary that you guys made. As far as promoting awareness and understanding of, you know, issues that veterans are facing as they're getting out of the military or even while they're serving.
I think it's a very important thing. I think it's got to be kind of guided a little bit with kind of what you're trying to tell, because, you know, obviously, you know, we do have a lot of Hollywoodized kind of like military stories out there that, you know, do help to promote knowledge and people learning about things, but can also kind of give people misconceptions. But I think, you know, in order to help people, one of the things you have to do is we have to make it normal for people to share these stories, or at least give them opportunities to share them, offer veterans platforms for books, for, you know, doing documentaries. And I think what we've seen from, you know, giving David this platform is that it's helped other veterans either with understanding and veterans' families with understanding, but also it gives them, I guess, an openness to want to share. Many of the people that we showed the film to early on while it was going around the festival circuit, we wanted to show it to a lot of veterans just to get feedback. You know, David shared it with a lot of his, you know, old regiment buddies. And one thing that was consistent throughout showing everybody is when we got done with the viewing, everybody there wanted to share a story that they had. You know, I think it just opened up the room for conversation. And I think one segment that goes back to is, I'll let you tell this story. Is David doing I'm trying to think, it was kind of a veterans.
Oh yeah. It was like a 2 or 3 day veterans retreat. And I think it was day two, and it's probably one of the most stressful days. And it's basically you kind of voluntarily get up there and tell this group of people you don't know about, you know, the shittiest day of your life or something that bothers you. And when I got up there and was speaking, I had multiple people, one in particular that came up to me afterwards and was like, hey, I put my name on the little, you know, whiteboard because I wasn't going to tell my story, but then you told yours. And he felt like, hey, well, if he can tell his, then I can tell mine. And I think in a nutshell, at least for us, that's the most important thing in the world, is just having a voice and also knowing that you're not fighting this by yourself.
Yeah. And maybe just if this gives anybody the, whatever it takes inside for them to want to share their story, if this can help them in some way, you know, that's a win for us. And that's what we hope that it does, is we hope it sparks conversations in families, among groups of friends, anybody who's served or had family members, you know, who have served. We hope that this helps to spark, you know, conversations, and hope, you know, to help people start healing, and experience right. That cathartic, you know, nature of getting that off your chest and being able to share.
And we've said from day one, you know, if this helps one person, then it was worth it.
Yeah. And that's the same thing I've said with this show, is I started it over 4 years ago now. I started it because several people that I served with, they took their own lives. And I said, I can't just sit around waiting for that phone to ring another time. Just, you know, with that kind of bad news, I got to do something. And I wanted to reach as many people as possible. And I was like, if this could help just one person, it's going to keep me going and motivate me to do that. But the cool thing is people like yourself, and other veterans who've come on and shared their story. I get all this kind of feedback from people saying like, it totally helped me process through whatever I was going through, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, maybe even encourage some people to share their stories as well. And so, like you said, a little bit earlier in this episode, there's a therapeutic effect to sharing your story. And it doesn't matter the medium that you're using, whether it's film or print, or it could even be an artistic approach with, you know, painting or whatever. Not that film isn't artistic, but, you know, just a different medium that you might be using. And it just encourages you and other people to just start opening up and sharing the story.
Well, as a vet yourself and as many people that you've interviewed on the show, you know exactly that late night phone call at 2-3 in the morning that you're like, what happened? Yeah. And like, those are the moments that we're fighting to avoid.
Exactly.
Like you just, your whole body tenses up. You're like, who died? Who did something? And we just want to let everyone know. Everyone has struggles. Everyone has problems. But hey, we can fight this shit together.
We can. Absolutely. Now, speaking of telling stories, we kind of have danced around this story that we've been talking about a little bit. We've kind of alluded to the fact that it exists. And David, I'd like to maybe get your side of your story that you guys talked about, because you are a part of the Operation Red Wings recovery efforts. Can you tell us about that and the effect that that type of operation had on you, and kind of what your story is, the story basically from your perspective?
Yeah, it's always a tough one.
Sure.
We were QRF station. We were, our FOB was Bagher Air Force Base in Afghanistan, and it was just a normal day. And we were, I still remember we were playing Tiger Woods, and the door got kicked in, and one of our squad leaders came in. I was a team leader at the time, and he came in and he was like, hey, a bird just got shot down outside of Sadabad. We're spinning up. So everybody got kitted. As soon as we got everybody out there, they realized the elevation we were going to be at, they had to start making cuts just due to the weight on the birds. And so we made our cuts, and we just kind of, basically it was mostly team leaders, squad leaders, platoon sergeant. I mean, like very few of the privates and stuff like that went. And we got on a bird probably 15 minutes after the door got kicked in. They said, hey, the bird got shot down. We're going to go to Jalalabad, and then we're going to launch from there. And they were like, we'll be back in 6 hours. Well, that 6 hours turned into about 13 days, I think. So we had no water, no food. We didn't ended up doing, we flew into where we were going to infill, and it was so foggy that night that they ended up turning the birds around at about the 32nd mark. And then we flew back to Jalalabad and had all night, the rest of that night and all day to just sit there and just think about what we knew we were going. I mean, we had imagery, we were looking at it on ISR. We didn't see anyone moving, but you know, you're holding that hope for the best. Yeah. And so the next cycle of darkness, we launched again. Ended up doing an 85-foot fast rope onto the side of a mountain, and then walked for the remainder of the night. Got to the edge of the hill to where the bird was, and it was very steep, a very steep incline. And we kind of took a look over the hill, and it was like, oh, this is bad. And so we dropped. There were about 15 of us, 12 to 15 of us that were on body recovery. The other group, and it wasn't a hell of a lot of people, but the other groups were doing presence patrols, also looking for that initial four-man SEAL element that was out there. So they kind of kept the heat off us. We dropped all of our kit and started putting bodies in bags. And, you know, some people ask me, you know, what's the best day of your life? And I'll say June 30th, 2005. And they say, what's the worst? Same day. And, you know, I take pride and honor the fact that I was able to get those guys home, because that's what I would have won. I think that's what all of us would want, is someone being like, whatever, we got dudes down, let's go. And to be able to do that and provide some sort of closure to the families was the most important thing that I've ever done. It was also the most painful and has caused the most traumatic points of my life as well. It was just a real ugly scene.
Sure.
I couldn't describe it to you any better without going into graphic detail, but it was bad. And I got into it a bit more in the documentary, so I don't want to bog you down with gory details, but it was not pretty.
Yeah, and I don't want you to share the whole story, obviously, because we want people to go check out the documentary. Again, Ranger is the name of the documentary, and we want people to go check that out and hear the whole story there. But it's that whole, I will never leave a fallen comrade mindset.
In the Ranger Creed.
Yeah, it's there for a reason, and it just puts it in the back of your mind when you go out on a mission. Doesn't matter how routine the mission might be. You're going out knowing that if something happens to you, someone's coming to get you to bring closure to your family. And in this case, you were that guy, and you and your teammates, I should say, were those guys who were out there gathering the fallen and making sure that they got back home and that their families were able to have the closure that they need and deserve. Obviously, definitely hats off to you. And I think it's a tremendous effort that you guys all had to go through, both physically exhausting and probably mentally exhausting as well. But it's like you said, the best day of your life because you're able to provide that closure to those families, but also the worst day because you had to do that type of work. And
if it was put in front of me again, I would do it exactly the same.
I have even absolutely no doubt.
Knowing what I was going to have trauma from emotionally for the rest of my life, I'd still be on that bird. And, me and my friends used to joke about it, but I always said, I'm always scared after the fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it's all done, I'm like, holy shit, that was intense. But in the moment, it's like A to B to C to D, and you don't really think about and that's probably why, they want younger kids in the military. Old people be like,
yeah, exactly.
That was sketchy, right?
Yeah, I blew my knee out walking to get the mail the other day. I'm not roping in from 85 feet. You're about to be out of your mind.
Exactly.
And he's like, yeah, whatever. Let's go.
Let's go.
Sure. Well, we're going to cut to another quick commercial break here. But when we get back, we're going to talk, kind of more of the nature of this film and, how it can help contribute to understanding of things like mental health and other challenges that veterans might face. So stay tuned. In a startling description, the UN food chief warned the world with the words, knocking on famine's door. He called what we're facing a perfect storm of a perfect storm. And he's not alone. Barron's published that a food shortage could be coming, even in the U.S. Farmers see it too. John Boyd Jr., a fourth-generation farmer, told Fox News that we're going to see empty food shelves in the coming months. That's why getting survival food is more important than ever, now. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling 4 Patriots survival food kits. It's not ordinary food. We're talking good for 25 years super survival food, hand-packed in a family-owned facility in the USA and giving jobs to over 200 Americans. They have different delicious breakfast, lunch, and dinner options. You can make these meals in less than 20 minutes. Just add boiling water, simmer, and serve. And right now, and for the next few days, listeners of the Drive On podcast will get 10% off their first order at 4patriots.com by using code DRIVEON. Go to 4patriots.com and use Drive On to start your stockpile today. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Drive On. Guys, we're really incredible experiences that you were just describing before the break, talking about your involvement in the Operation Red Wings and just how that kind of incorporates into the film and everything else that you guys were talking about earlier. But as we kind of mentioned, guys, the film talks about the like the raw nature of combat and the aftermath, you know, like having to go recover bodies. Like that's just not the sexy Hollywood thing that you see all the time. Right. But that's the reality. Like that's something that has to happen. And we talked a little bit about this, about, you know, kind of raising awareness, but how do you guys think that the story as you guys described it in this documentary can contribute to a better understanding of the challenges that veterans face in terms of the mental health and other aspects of life after the military?
I think, you know, one thing we really tried to do is to have it be that raw telling, which I feel like, unfortunately, a lot of times when they sit down to make a military documentary, they're getting guys and they're putting them in a room with strangers and they're like, hey, tell us about the hardest day of your life. And a lot of times we get this very military telling of,
like, almost scripted.
Like my lieutenant's over my shoulder watching me tell this story, and I'm going to give you the brief in a very professional military manner. And a lot of times that's what we see portrayed in documentaries. So when we went to make this, I wanted to try and steer clear of that in any way, shape, or form, and really have that raw telling. And I think that is what helps open up people and see that, hey, if this guy's going to tell his story this way and he can go on and tell, you know, millions of people this story, I can say something. I can bring something up. I might be able to talk about what I went through, or at least I can show somebody this film and they can go to me and say, hey, so did you go through stuff like this too? And you can be like, yeah, that's a very similar story to mine. So it almost gives people a way of sharing something about themselves, even if they don't want to open up and necessarily tell that hard day, you know, story. This is a way for them to, you know, at least share with somebody and say, hey, yeah, I went through a lot of this too. I see myself in this.
And one of the things for me is, you know, it doesn't matter how tough you are, what training you went through, how badass you may think you are, we're all human. And this affects people, no matter how cool you think you are, how badass, it hurts. And that gets to be a really lonely place sometimes.
Right.
And that's what we're just trying to bring to light. It's like, hey, man, call a buddy.
Yeah, call somebody. You don't have to shove it all down and ignore it. And I think getting away from the stereotype of not talking, not addressing, you know, how this may be, you know, destabilizing you mentally, and, you know, that leads to destabilizing you physically. And a lot of these guys turn to substance abuse, turn to a lot of different things. And, you know, in order to try and bury that story, because that is the rhetoric and that's what most of those guys know, as like, hey, you go do your thing, you keep your mouth shut, you go home, and, you know, the war's over, live your life.
Men don't cry.
Yeah.
Right.
Bullshit.
They certainly do.
Yeah. It's a tough thing for people to, you know, get to that vulnerable spot or do that. So I think having somebody, you know, at least be the first person to tee off, it's like, all right, at least you're not the first guy, you know, going up there and having to, you know, send the drive down. You know, at least somebody else has gone before you. All right, the pressure's off a little bit.
Teeing off in front of the 19th hole. Yeah. 30 yeah. drunk people up there, and you're like,
oh, sure, right?
Right. Yeah. So hopefully it gives people some courage to do that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's a time and a place for stuffing some of those things down. Like when you're in the middle of the shit and you're bagging up bodies and you're dragging them to wherever they need to be. And maybe dragging's not the right word, that as I'm saying that, I kind of like kick myself.
You're not far off.
So. Yeah. So there's a time and a place where, like, yeah, that's an emotional thing that you're going through and it's really tough, but that's not the time to be breaking down and crying about it. You got to kind of shove some of that stuff down, but at some point you got to pick that stuff back up.
It's going to come out in some way, shape, or form.
It will manifest itself. And, you know, that's why I always kind of live by the credo: I'll be scared when it's over.
Yeah, and that's, I think you said that earlier too, and I think that's a great way to look at it, is there's no time to be scared right now in the middle of a firefight or in the middle of, you know, recovering these bodies on this cliffside that, you know, may or may not be safe to be walking on. Who knows, you know, at this point, it's a kind of uncharted territory. You have a job to do and go do it.
And that's it.
Afterwards, you'll look back on it and be like, oh my God, what did I just do? You know, right?
Yeah.
It can be really scary looking back at it. But that's the time when you need to process those emotions and get the therapeutic effect of picking that stuff back up and dealing with it, as opposed to just keeping it shoved down, because it's hard.
It's not gonna stay there forever.
Yeah. And it's hard to pick it back up. But it's necessary, because like you said, yeah, it's not going to stay there forever, and it's going to come out in ways that are maybe kind of ugly. And I'd rather see someone cry it out and get those emotions out, as opposed to, you know, beating their spouse or kicking their dog or, you know,
yeah, it's a whole new, it's all a that whole other new stuff. War. It's a whole new war when you get home. And, you know, that's one of the, I think one of the most important chapters in the film is talking about coming home and battling that new war, which is being home and having to figure out who am I? What is my life now? And what am I going to do? And how do I deal with what I have done and what I've had to do to be alive and be here and to you know, be back in this world, because they're two very, very different worlds.
And you know, Sean and I were talking yesterday actually about this very point, and it was, no matter how much you explain to someone what it was like, you can never put them in that moment. They'll say, oh my God, that must have been terrible. But they have nothing, no frame of reference for it. So when you, at least in my personal experience, when I came home, I didn't know who to talk to. And that's why I ended up talking to Sean. And I mean, that was, I remember the first time that we talked, it was very awkward for me. I didn't know, am I telling him too much? Am I not telling him enough? Am I making the story complete? And it was hard. But once that ball got rolling, it was like, all right, fire hose. You're drinking through a fire hose now, buddy. And we just never stopped. Just with the information coming back, telling the story, remembering the details. So, I mean, that was huge. Yeah. I mean, Sean, I can literally say Sean helped save my life. Just by being there to listen.
Being there to listen. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, it's that simple. For the people who are out there who maybe have a loved one who's going through a tough time, and they don't know what to do. Like, literally, you got two ears, use them. Like, sit there and listen. Just listen to their story. And you mentioned it's hard for people to imagine what it's actually like to be there. You can describe it all you want, but to actually imagine it, you kind of have to be there and physically, you know, be present and experience it yourself. And even two people who are in the same exact scenario, they may experience things two different ways, right? And I know there's been a movie made up about this situation too. I believe that you were in the I think it was it Lone Survivor? Was that about the same?
That was the initial. Marcus Luttrell was part of that 4-man SEAL element on Recce reconnaissance. And once they got compromised is when they launched the QRF bird, which was the one that got shot down.
Turbine 33
that got shot down. Right, so exactly.
8 SEALs and 8 crew members from the 160th that went down on that bird going to get Marcus Luttrell, who ended up being the lone survivor.
Right. And I guess the reason why I bring that up is because someone could even sit there and watch that movie and it's not going to equal the experience that he had while he was on that mountaintop, you know, fighting for his life, literally, and going through all of those experiences. It can give you kind of a general idea, but it's not going to give you that pit in the stomach kind of feeling, or the fear or the anger or the frustration or the whatever other emotions he may have been going through. Like those things don't even compare when you're watching the movie. And so, yeah, you can tell some about it, but it's definitely going to be different. But I think it still at least opens people's eyes up to the fact that these things exist.
And one of the things I don't think people don't want to understand, I think they genuinely do, especially when it's a loved one or someone that you know, one of your friends, whatever.
Sure.
It's just, they just don't have the comprehension to be able to understand. And until you get chucked out and you're on the street and bad things start happening, I've never played in the NBA. I'd step on the floor and be like, I played horse once.
Yeah. I think until you're really there on the streets and experiencing those things and, you know, smelling it, feeling it and all that, you, like he said, you can explain it to somebody only to a certain degree. But when you've been there and you've seen those things, you've had that veil pulled back and you realize just how fragile the world is around you. It's almost something, you know, like you said, you don't necessarily want to share with people because it's like you kind of to yourself wish a little bit that you didn't know and you didn't understand and have to have that shown to you. And no matter how much you tell somebody, until they're on the street with it and facing death like that, it's just something you can't understand.
Yeah. And like you said, you don't want your kids to ever have to experience that type of thing. Right. And I remember actually one time when I was in Afghanistan, one of my interpreters asked me like, why are you here? Why did you want to, join the military and, come over here and fight in a place like this? And I said, because I don't want my kids to end up having to come here and fight 20, 30, however many years from now, and have this war continue to go on. I'd rather be the one who's there fighting and dealing with all this crap.
And I said the exact same thing almost verbatim to my children. I went to war so you didn't have to.
Right.
I don't want my military. I would not trade my military service for all the money in Fort Knox, but I don't want them to have to experience it. I love watching football, but I don't want my kids to play it.
Sure. Yeah. And I think there's that element of like, it's that protector mindset that you have. And I think a lot of us who served in the military have that, like, we want to be protectors, whether it's, we want to protect our country or our communities or just the guy to the left or to the right of us. We want to be the protector. You look at stories of, guys who jump on grenades to protect their friends or whatever, like those guys, they threw out the fact that, yeah, this is going to totally rock my world and probably kill me. But I'm here to protect these guys. And so I'm going to do what I need to do. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more.
All right. We're going to take another quick commercial break here in just a second, but when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about the film, where you can go to find it and things like that. So stay tuned.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. If you're having a tough time or thinking about suicide, you're not alone, and there's hope. VA's Veterans Crisis Line is full of responders who listen and help. Many are veterans or have veteran family members and friends, so they're prepared to address your challenges. After calling, you'll be connected to the next available Crisis Line responder. That person may ask, "Are you thinking of suicide? Or what plan can we put in place to keep you safe today?" If you choose, the responder will share your name and personal information with your local VA Suicide Prevention Coordinator, who will connect you to local VA assistance and resources. Don't wait. Dial 988, then press 1.
Everybody, welcome back to Drive On. If you've missed the last couple episodes of Drive On, you might have missed that we're trying to close out each episode with some humor. Laughter can be the best medicine, and today I want to try out a new segment. Last time I've been doing a few jokes, and some of them are kind of corny, but I want to try out a new segment that I'm calling Is It Service Connected? Where we take a look at a video of a service member doing something stupid or otherwise getting injured, doing some crazy stuff, and we try to predict whether or not whatever happened to this the soldier or soldiers, plural, could be, would qualify for disability benefits somewhere down the line, should they be so seriously injured that they that the, those injuries become kind of a permanent type thing. But before we get to that, Sean, David, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you guys today. Can you let people know in the audience where they can go to watch Ranger and anything else that you might want to add?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ranger is currently available on Amazon. You can find it on there. You can also check us out on Instagram at Ranger Movie, and all of our links and everything is in there. And just to say, it's been a pleasure for both of us to chat with you today and get to talk about the film and just, you know, hopefully that it reaches out to, you know, some new audiences and gets to that guy who needs guy or gal who needs to see it.
Just raise that awareness.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you guys again for that. Now it's time for Is It Service Connected? So I'm going to queue up this video here. Give me just one second here while I get this going so you guys can see it. I want to make sure that you guys have the opportunity to see this this video as well as I go to play it. So for the podcast listeners, it's audio only, obviously. I'm going to do my best to try to describe the video that we're watching here. So that way you can kind of play along at home as well. But you can also tune in at WTSMTV.com to see the video, or I may also post the video to social media later on too. So follow Drive On Podcast at Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all those social media sites. So I'll put that video up there as well. All right. Can you guys see the video that popped up on the screen there?
All right. We got it.
All right. So I'm going to play it. It's just a short video here. We got two soldiers out in the woods and they are running into a tree. Slammed right face first into a tree.
Are they trying to get out of like a field exercise or something?
I don't know
like,
what it was. I think I saw some. Good thing
he's wearing that helmet.
Let me do this one more time here. Hang on.
Yeah.
It looked like.
Well, headbutt.
I think like his soul kept going like after.
Yeah.
He ran so hard into this tree and then flopped back. You know, there's probably some whiplash there. Probably a TBI when his head hit.
That's 10% right there.
He's got at least 10%. I mean, you know, his head smacked into the ground. Who knows what he landed on there? He did have
TBI for sure.
Yeah, that's I get 30% for TBI. probably
somewhere around there. I think
as long as nobody finds out he did it that way. Solid,
I know. The problem is this video exists right now, and that's where he's going to be screwed.
Main problem hurting that, him
that's
right his, now.
That's the biggest problem right there. Is that video exists?
So I got a quick follow-up for you.
Go for it.
We were in airborne school. I think it was like our third jump or something like that. And there was this guy. I still remember his name, but I'm not going to say it. He was an older gentleman. He was like 34. We were all like 19, 20 years old. And we're on our third jump. And on Fryer Drop Zone at Fort Benning, where we would jump into, where airborne school is, they parked like an ambulance out in the middle of the drop zone in case someone had like some catastrophic injury or something. And you got all the instructors and they're on the DZ and they have their bull horns because people don't know what they're doing really.
Sure.
And this guy, he's coming down and they're screaming at him through the bull horn, like, pull a slip. And he either didn't listen, panicked, didn't do anything. And homeboy landed directly on top of the back of the ambulance. Broke both of his legs. Is it service connected?
I would say yes, probably service connected.
And luckily, the medics were right there.
Yeah, he landed. I mean, all the medics.
Pull him off the roof.
It couldn't be a better place to land, I don't think.
Oh, there's even.
As far as the spot to break your leg, I mean, that's the one.
Maybe the better place would be right next to the ambulance, not on top. You still got to figure out how to get him down.
They just load you on the gurney and put you right in there.
Or if they had the doors open, he could have just like slid right in.
Yeah, kind of scoot in there, yeah.
Awesome, guys. Well, again, thank you for taking the time to join us. Thank you for sharing your stories and sharing it with all of us so that we can learn from your point of view and everything that you went through for future generations to make better decisions and really understand what goes on when we go to combat. So thank you again.
Well, thank you so much for having us on here. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.